This is the Player Spotlight, every week throughout the season with Bob, Dave, and Moore.
It is time for the Player Spotlight here live from Seahawks headquarters. Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. A pleasure to bring this man to the program. We had a chance to speak to him during training camp, and now we're six games into the season, so we can see how much different and how much more experienced Ben Burkervin is. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. How about y'all?
Doing good. We had a chance to speak to you. It was training camp, and we were just talking about you getting used to, you know, the surroundings and the big, you know, the big leagues, if you will, and now you're almost halfway through the season. Has it lived up to what you thought it would be? I'm sure you had an image in your mind of what the NFL was like. How close is that comparison?
I knew it was a competitive league, but I had no idea that we were going to play, you know, five games, something like that, that had been decided by a point or two. So I think that's the thing that's blown my mind the most is every team is good. And, like, it doesn't matter what the record is. Doesn't matter. Every team has good players. And week to week, it's coming down to the wire. And it's intense in the way that college football just can't compare to.
Do you wish you could go back to college and play now, knowing what you know now?
If I could play one game in college, it would be I think I could do some stuff that I probably didn't do back then. It would be a good time. But I think that's the thing you feel at any level. I mean, when I got to college, I thought the exact same thing about high school. It's like, dang, I could go back and just tear it up. So I think, you know, there's just so much you learn about, you know, football and just the way to do things that, you know, if you went back to that level, even though there's high-level players, just the amount of knowledge and stuff you pick up here, I mean, it wouldn't even be the same thing.
If you went back and played Washington State, would they still have four plays offensively?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, thanks.
I didn't need NFL experience to play them.
Oh, boy.
My college stuff's fine.
Super Coug here, so get ready.
He knows. That's why he's like, baiting him right now.
Show me as many times as you want. 4-0.
Don't you ever have any regret at all that, you know, when you came out of, where was it, Menlo Park?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that the Cougs recruited you, didn't they?
I didn't talk to them at all.
You didn't talk to them at all?
Mm-mm.
Did they talk to you?
I don't believe so. I don't remember. I didn't try to reach out to them or anything like that.
What about Stanford? Did you think about going there?
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go, and I thought I would go, and I didn't fit what Coach Shaw was looking for. Oh. He thought I was too small to play backer for them and not fast enough to play safety, and so they told me to walk on there, and I was like, yeah, I got some offers other places, so I think I'll go that route.
Yeah.
He's Stanford. Washington State. Here,
okay, so. Okay, well, I need some help because I can't stand losing to you guys anymore. It's been since 2012. And you really feel like all we run. I mean, I see Leach over there with his little notepad and, you know, giving the signals and stuff. But
why are you punishing yourself right now?
I don't know. But
you know what his answer is going to
be. Ben seems like a cool kid.
He is.
You had a hell of a college career, by the way.
Thank you.
I mean, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He's trying to soften you up right now.
Yeah, and then he's gonna...
No, but do we only run four plays?
I don't know. I mean, it's not actually four, but it's... The offense has not evolved in the time that I was there in a way that if you play defense the right way and soundly, it's very hard for that offense to be successful, which you saw the 4 years we were there, that I was there at least. And the thing that happens is a lot of people, I think, get really scared of Washington State's vertical passing game. And so all of a sudden you're watching teams drop eight, their buzzers are all of a sudden 20 yards downfield, and then you see these running backs who have 70 catches every year getting 15-yard chunk plays, and everyone forgets about that. And so I think when you watch a game where they struggle, you see people tackling well, playing the flats, and all of a sudden you realize that what makes Washington State dangerous is people being so scared of having the top taken off their defense that they start giving up little things that they think, oh, well, they won't get that all game. But if you never cover it, they're just going to throw to that running back all day long. And that's what they did every year I was there. I mean, I think maybe 1 year they had a receiver be the leading guy in terms of receptions, but the way their offense is built is if you don't tackle the flats and play aggressive, they're just going to pick you apart. And so, you know, when you understand that, you can attack it. I think when I was there, I can remember 1 year he put in a fly sweep, and that was the only time I remember there being a play that was new. There are things that go up and down in terms of what he likes year to year, so maybe he has a run play he likes a little bit more this year than the year before, but it's all the same stuff. So the only thing I remember that was new was a fly sweep.
How's that for an answer?
Well, that's a great answer, but, well, I don't know if I liked it or not. Probably didn't like it.
If we're that predictable,
but, I mean, we scored 38 or 34. I mean, we're in the 30s a lot. We scored 60 against UCLA.
Can I make you feel better? He was all academic Pac-12, you know, so, I mean, he's probably a lot smarter, like a lot smarter than every other linebacker in the Pac-12. Was that a nice way to soften it? Okay. Bob, your question.
I'm just watching Seahawk the confused football. Look
I'm
on Jim's face.
I'm trying to figure out where I left off there. Well, no, but I guess
think
my
you
question.
Finished.
No, I wasn't done.
Ask him about
if
the
it,
snow.
But if it's that simple to stop the Cougs, why do they seem to score at will at times against
because
other teams?
I think people get nervous and they don't play fundamentally sound defense, and that's really. I mean, if you look at Washington football, our defense that we played in the time I was there, the 4 years. It's not just the Cougs. I mean, we tackle well against anybody. We play sound. I mean, I think about the last year we were there, I think we had maybe two plays we gave up over 20 yards. So our defense is built on being fundamentally sound in tackling. And I think that the emphasis we put on that is probably more than other teams put on it. And they, you know, they don't want to hit in practice. I mean, at UW, we practiced to cut tempo. So that was pretty much live, except you weren't going to the ground. So you're wrapping up every play. Linemen are cutting. Everything's pretty much live. And so when you're playing Washington State, if you can tackle, you're fine. And what happens is they put up 60 points, 35 points. People play the same stuff we're playing, but they don't play it as tightly and they don't tackle. And when you don't tackle against Washington State, those 5-yard checkdowns suddenly become first down. And once you get in a rhythm, you get on your heels, you start getting scared, you start running into problems.
Did you feel like you had an unfair advantage playing in the slush?
All right, Jim, you had your Washington State segment.
Yeah, let's go. Let's move on from the Seahawks football. Seahawks football.
It couldn't just be that they were a better team. It had to be an element.
We had to play in the snow, too. We didn't plan on snow either.
Sorry, should I ask him if he has a dog?
Mauro, that's the best thing that you've done. Thank you. Okay, Bob, your turn.
All right. Well, you brought up tackling, and I'm curious, when we see games where guys are missing tackles, and we see it at the pro level, obviously, Is that a fundamental thing in your mind? Is it guys trying to lay a big hit and not wrapping up? Is it bad luck sometimes? You got an ankle, a guy spins out of it. When you look at broken tackles or missed tackles at this level, what would you say is the biggest reason for
that? Yeah, I think the biggest reason is fundamentals. I mean, I think that's the case at any level, especially with the kind of athletes you have in the NFL. You can't get away with the things you can get away with on lesser players. I mean, an arm tackle might take down, you know,
a
kid in college, but all of a sudden, you know, you're playing the Alvin Kamaras, Adrian Peterson, those kind of guys. If you don't have perfect form, I mean, they're too good for that. So I think when you look at missed tackles, it's either the wrong foot's up, the wrong shoulder, that kind of thing. So it's a fundamental of football, and if you have a little bit off, that's where you start seeing missed tackles and they start adding up.
Yeah, and same thing with mistakes, I felt like anyway, that you make a mistake in college, sometimes they find it, sometimes they don't. You vacate a zone, do the wrong in the wrong gap in the NFL. They find it. Mm-hmm. And so leading up to tell us what that was about. I don't expect you to tell us what Bobby said after those first three drives went down. But what was that like when Bobby got the defense together over on the Cleveland sidelines?
I mean, he's our leader. He's been the captain for the last couple of years, and I think everyone knows why. I mean, he's the best linebacker in the NFL, and it's not just what he does in terms of his play. I think he's a guy that, you know, everyone looks to kind of set the tone for, you know, not only the defense but our team. And I think that when it comes down to it, everyone's going to listen. We have something to say. And, you know, that game, obviously, we didn't start out well. But I think, you know, it was, whatever, 20-6 starting the second quarter. And I think they scored maybe one more time the rest of the game. You know, we have a 4 turnovers, a 4th down stop. We block a punt. So I just think it came down to just, you know, we had to reset. And he knew that. And obviously, we got it done.
Yeah, and he's a guy that doesn't yell and scream a lot. And, you know, so when he does, it was pretty meaningful.
Yeah, people pay attention.
Yeah.
Do you think long-term, when you look back on your NFL career, that because, I mean, you could be on another team and probably starting at linebacker, but the quality of these three linebackers that you're playing behind, what you're learning is going to serve you well down the road? And I imagine you and Cody are great students and just biding your time.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I've had, you know, a lot of my friends like, well, don't you wish you went somewhere where, you know, maybe they were weak at linebacker and you'd have a chance to go? And obviously you want to play. But at the same time, in terms of, you know, having a long career and having the opportunities that, you know, I have to be at this organization, I mean, I think that there's more that I can learn, you know, from these guys for as long as they're playing than I probably could anywhere else in the league. I mean, I don't know where anywhere else where there's almost, you know, 30 years basically of NFL experience playing still in one room. So it's pretty remarkable to get to have, you know, Mike and Bobby and KJ, who are able to, you know, not only show it on the field, but, you know, anything. I mean, you know, I talk to KJ all the time about stuff off the field, just advice about whether it's taxes or housing or anything like that. I mean, they know more than I could ever imagine. I'm still just a kid, and they've been doing this for quite a long time now. So it's pretty special to be here.
You just touched on what I wanted to ask you, and that was
taxes.
That was set yeah. Next after Cougs and the snow and stuff. But just if you were a question asker, if you were somebody that were picking the brains of Bobby and KJ, or if you were more of an observer. observer where you just kind of sit back and watch how they did things, or maybe it's a mix of both?
Yeah, I think, you know, in meetings and stuff like that, it's more of an observed thing. You don't want to get in the way of, you know, what's going on. But definitely in the locker room and off the field kind of stuff, anything like that, I have no problem. And they're super receptive to us coming up and asking questions. It's not a thing where it's like we just are supposed to be, you know, seen, not heard, or anything like that. So definitely, you know, you pick and choose your moments. You don't want to interrupt something or anything like that. But if you have a question, you know, whether it's about ball or anything else, they're always willing to talk to us.
What's been the biggest adjustment for you? We often hear rookies talk about the speed of the game and, whoa, it's so much faster and these are the best athletes at every spot. Is that as jarring as it is for some others?
I think it's just the level of preparation required. It's kind of what he was touching on, that in college you can get away with stuff, doing something a little bit wrong and still be right in a way, where in here it's like the difference between taking a block and shedding it front side or backside is the difference between a touchdown and nothing, where in college it's maybe one more yard. And so I think it's just the level of detail and preparation required to be successful the way you need to be on the field is just far and above anything you think you know in college. Because in college you have I just got to work harder when I get the NFL. It's just a little bit more preparation, but it's a massive jump. I think it's a bigger jump than high school to college football.
Yeah. What about when you look at a guy, and now you got this guy, Lamar Jackson. I mean, you probably watched him in college, too. I love watching him play, but looking at him on film, I mean, he's a huge nightmare. What are you guys seeing from them, and what kind of – I mean, are those guys as astonished as everyone? Because he's only played, 13, 14 games in the NFL.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty remarkable watching him on tape, some of the things he does. Obviously, he's a great runner, and, you know, everyone knows that, but I think the craziest thing is sometimes if you watch him throw the ball, it never once looks like he's working hard. And he's throwing the ball harder than probably anyone we've seen on tape this year. So The skills that he has and the way that they've tailored their offense to work his skill set is pretty formidable. So you definitely – it's a game where you have to be very gap sound. It's almost like a college game, the way they're playing their offense. You know, it's stuff that I used to see, you know, week in, week out in the Pac-12. And it's unique to see at this level because the NFL, you really don't see the kind of stuff they're doing. So it becomes, you know, a game of just understanding really gap sound football and having to understand that – he's going to make plays. I mean, he's a dynamic athlete. He's been tearing it up, you know, last year and this year. So just one of those games where you're playing a guy that's in the NFL for a reason. He's a starting quarterback for a reason. So somebody's got to be better. And at the end of the day, hopefully we can make more plays than he can.
Hey, Ben, I'm a little gun-shy about asking this next question for fear that Maura might enter with a buzzer here, probably on behalf of the listeners. But it's Oregon week.
Okay.
It's Husky Duck week. What was that like for you playing at Washington when you faced Oregon?
Yeah, you know, it's exciting. I think when I got to UW, I knew about Wazoo and the Apple Cup and all that. I didn't really know about Oregon coming from California, but once you get there, it's pretty clear. You know, you don't want to lose to those guys. And, you know, I lost twice. I won two, and definitely feels a lot better to beat Oregon than to be on the losing side of that. I can tell you, I mean, that's the taste I have in my mouth from last year is losing to them, unfortunately. So, you know, hopefully we'll go out, and thankfully it's at Husky Stadium, so we can go out there and hopefully get some work done.
You be there on the sideline on Saturday?
Probably not, just with the way our schedule works on Saturday. I don't think I can get over there.
I'm sure you're already doing this, but give Will our love and, you know.
Boy, what an optimistic guy he is.
Yeah,
That
was so disappointing.
Yeah.
Talking about Will Dissly, of course, but I know you guys are buddies, so tell him to hang in there.
I will.
Ben, it's good to talk to you, man, and thanks for shedding light on that Cougs offense for us.
I'll talk about that anytime.
Yeah.
More than happy to.
We'll listen to it at any time.
You're a nice kid, man. Thanks.
No problem.
We appreciate it, man. Thanks so
much. Thank you, guys.
There you go. There's Ben Burkervin of your Seattle Seahawks spending a few minutes with us here and really dialing us in on what the Cougs do over and over and over, apparently. Jim, did that help?
He was very nice about it.
You know, Jessamyn never did what Maura just did there. And maybe Jess is thinking, maybe I should have done it more often. So I
was getting 5 minutes left text, and I wanted to make sure we actually talked to him a little bit about the team he's on.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, the listeners are probably
thinking. It was interesting. But if we had 20 minutes, we didn't have enough time. I'm sorry. Did you guys?
No,
I have
that's
to
okay.
Ask,
Maura,
that's
don't
really,
apologize.
Really,
that's all right. I
kind
of got a kick out of it, and I think, you know, I probably have that coming sometimes.
I have to ask, because I had a unique angle, if you guys saw the front of his hat, because all I saw, it was like this kind of vintage-looking brown baseball cap, and on the back it said Hidden Valley Ranch. So I was wondering
the
what the front
dressing?
Said. Yeah, I was
no
wondering
way.
What the front said.
I didn't even pay attention
It had like
it.
A little logo on it. I don't know if it said I'm HB curious. Or whatever.
But I didn't want to. I didn't that wasn't know a question that to interrupt for.
Salad dressing companies have hats.
I guess so.
Wow.
What a nice kid, though. I already said that.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, he's really, really smart.
You're right. I can see. I mean, he just seems very bright.
Well, and he's a guy, obviously, it sounds like he's been doubted based on his stature his whole career, and yet he's defied the odds. I remember when, before the cuts were made here, we were all trying to speculate each position group. All right, these guys are probably in. These guys are probably bubble guys, maybe practice squad. And he was a guy that it felt like it was almost a consensus amongst people here in the building. Yeah, he might be a guy they try to slip through on the practice squad. I don't know if he's got the size to make it. And boom, here he is.
Well, it's just weird that people would think that because of his size. Because anybody remember Sam Mills? I talk about Sam Mills quite a bit.
How about London Fletcher?
Well, I was just going to mention him. But, you know, Sam Mills was 5'9", 5'8". They called him the field mouse. And he was under everybody. I had a buddy at Stanford named Toy Cook who played on, I think, their national baseball championship team. And then also he played for 11 years in the NFL.
Played for the Saints?
Yeah. And he played with the Dome Patrol down there, which was Von Johnson, Ricky Jackson. I'm trying to remember the other outside guy. He ended up going to Oakland, but Sam Mills. And Sam Mills, he said he would accidentally blow people up in practice because he was just under everybody. And so who else? I mean, Lofa is not the tallest guy in the world.
How tall was London? London was like a 5'9".
He's like
guy,
5'9", 5'10". Yeah. And so, I mean, it's all about leverage. So, and you see the way he flies around the field, and he's incredibly smart. So he's going to pick up whatever, you know, defense that he has to. So, you know, I don't know. People worry about maybe his weight or whatever. I don't know what the problem is, but there's been enough linebackers that Jesse Tuggle is another one that played for Atlanta back in the day. So, yeah, there's plenty of examples of, you know, I told him that. Don't ever let anybody tell you that you can't play in this league at your height.
Patrick Swilling.
Pat Swilling's the other guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks to the 206.
That's the first time I've met him, but it did strike me that he looked smaller than the typical linebacker.
Well,
he definitely looks more like a defensive back, but boy, what a player. That college career that he had, you can see why the Seahawks drafted him. And I think it's going to work out here. And Dave, he's probably been good on special teams, hasn't he?
Yeah, from what I've seen. I mean, remember he forced the fumble in the Saint game.
It wasn't you. Somebody was talking to me about that play saying, yeah, he actually kind of screwed that play up, but it turned out because he forced the fumble. Maybe he overran the tackle or
I think
got his arm on it or
something.
He went
past it, and then, but he reached back and knocked it out. So,
is that your experience, though, going from college to pro, as he was explaining, saying it's the difference between a one-yard gain and a touchdown? Yeah. Like, you get away with that in college, and it might gain an extra yard versus – you get on the wrong side here, it's a touchdown.
It's just so – that's the part that's so different. And, you know, in college – and I don't know what it was entirely, that feeling, but I remember thinking that after a week of practice in the NFL, if I could go back to college right now, I'd kill it. And it was just something to do with, you know, how detailed the game is and figuring certain things out. And I guess when you're in college, you don't think about strategy and all that stuff as much as you do when you get in the NFL. But yeah, totally. I mean, you make a mistake in the NFL, it gets found out right away. So yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad he said that because I always felt that way too. Even more so than like he said, going from high school to college. I felt that way after a few weeks in college, if I could go back to high school now. But the pro jump is so much more because, I mean, look, you're funneling, 125 Division I programs with, you know, 60, 70, 80 guys on them that are already the cream of the crop down into, you know, about 3,000 players,
right?
I guess, or a little bit less than that, but, you know, maybe 2,000 players. So, yeah, it's really cool watching him. It is kind of frustrating, though. You'd like to see him get out there and get on, but you don't want it because of injury. But I'd like to see him and Cody Barton get some reps.
Could there have been a worse team for him to come to just in terms of opportunity to play? I mean, you're talking about maybe the best trio of linebackers in the NFL.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at Carolina, I guess. They got Keekly. But, yeah, this is a really good group here, and there's not a weakness, really, in any of their games.
Well, even the depth that you have there with Ben Burke-Kirvin, who we just talked to, and with Cody Barton and Shaquem Griffin, too. So, I mean, it used to seem like there was a huge drop-off.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the first time.
And it doesn't seem like as big a drop-off, certainly not with Barton, anyway.
Yeah, well, and those guys just lack experience. But I know that him and Cody both played lots of special teams in college, and that's something that's kind of new. I know that was hard for me because I didn't play any special teams, and mainly it was because of my knee injury. You know, my senior year when I got healthy, they kept me off of a lot of those teams. But these guys are pretty adept at that, and they're also it's good training ground for those guys because you're making open field tackles and getting off blocks and things like that. So
he was speaking your language when we were talking about, you know, kind of the main reason behind some of these missed tackles and talking about that. And he was explaining, you know, just discipline and detail. And you're sitting there nodding like, yep, that's exactly right. I mean, it's just is that it? Just to focus on detail? Simple as that?
Yeah. And also, you know, it's like in the NFL. I always say that, like, there's sort of an agreement that, okay, you hit me and I go down. You know, the guys in the NFL, and especially a guy like Marshawn, it's like, no, you've got to earn this. Yeah, if you're going to get me on the ground. Yep, Chris Carson's a great example. I thought, you know, probably the guy that exemplified that the most was Marshawn Lynch, though. It was like, you know, you can't just hit me with an arm tackle or whatever. So it's so different, you know, at this league. But you can understand, like I said, funneling it down, I mean, it's the best of the best. And even, you know, like he said too, and I always try to get that out of the players, that there are no bad teams. And when you look at film and you just see straight ballers, I mean, there's no weeks off or anything like that. That as bad as a team may look and their record, and when you watch them on film and see the kind of athletes that they are, it's all pretty close talent wise.
Do you think he'd have that same opinion watching film of the Dolphins?
Yes, I do. I think I guarantee you he'd find a few. I mean, those guys aren't playing well together, obviously, but
they look so disjointed.
It's not like they have a bunch of slouches down there. I mean, they're still guys that made it in the NFL.
Certainly, they just look so bad when you watch some of the plays.
Yeah.
And I know they isolate the worst moments for the highlight reels and things like that, but boy, when you watch them compared to even the Browns or anybody else that's lost more than they've won, that looks like a different level of losing.
There has to be some players down there that want to live in Miami, right?
Oh,
it's not
yeah.
like everybody's tanking down there, right?
Bars are up until 5 down there.
You know, that's great.
I blew it, by the way. I forgot that he's into movies, Ben Burke-Kirvin. He's a cinema and media studies major.
You blew it. What
all
would you
that
have asked
time
him?
You spent talking about Cougar football could have been put into that.
That probably would have been
what
more
would you have asked him about movies?
Oh, I don't know. Something about, like, what's your favorite movie or why'd you get into that? Why'd you have that as your major, that type of thing? And do you want to be a director someday? Do you want to be an actor?
Did he used to have long hair?
Yeah, look at him here.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, right there.
Yeah, and a beard.
It's good radio, guys.
Yeah, we're looking at a picture of him. He's got long hair and a beard there. He no longer has that.
It's misfit radio, dude.
Yeah, there you
go. One time during the broadcast, it was pointed out to me by our executive producer, Brian O'Connell, that I said, look at that.
On radio?
No one can look at anything.
All right. Well, our thanks to Ben Burke-Kirvin. A good conversation with him. Hopefully you're able to catch that. If not, it'll be up there for you on the podcast page after the show at 710sports.com. Meanwhile, talk a little baseball. And somebody in this Mariner division is making a big move and rumors of even bigger moves, which could put the Mariners even further in the hole. We'll talk about that with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio, streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
How are you feeling, Jim? You okay after that Ben Burke-Kirvin interview? He wasn't, he didn't really give you good feelings about what the Cougs do offensively.
No, he didn't. But you know what I liked about talking to him is just how outspoken he is about it. And he didn't back off. We talked to him, when was it, Dave? I think this past summer.
Yeah.
And that was when he mentioned that we run only 4 plays and easy to defend and Jimmy Lake's a genius and all that stuff. And I appreciated that he didn't back off on that. In fact, he expounded on it.
It's easy for him when he's 4-0 in his time there.
Yeah, he's a very sharp kid, and you can see. And I always say, I think your personality matters, and how you express yourself. And you know, I'm sure he's very impressive in all those interviews. But 3-time All Pac-12 All Academic team, and I know you didn't get to the movies with him because I think he wants to. Did he take a? It was a section of a communication degree that he got. that specializes in film or something like that, majored in film. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does later on in life. We were talking about it. Yeah, he's plenty smart enough. I mean, to be a coach. I just don't know if he would want to go that route. I mean, grinding it out as a NFL coach.
They make decent money, don't they?
Yeah, they do. But, I mean, it just takes a while to get there. You know, it takes, and you come from the NFL, and especially now, I don't think you're going to see a lot of ex-players coaching now, because you come from the NFL and you're making, you know, the money that they make. And I just remember leaving every night, you know, if I had to stay late for treatment or whatever, you'd look up in the coach's office and the lights are on. A lot of times those coaches will spend the night in their offices. Mm-hmm. And then when you get there in the morning, they're there earlier than you are. So it's a tough way to grind it out. It's also, if you're trying to have a family, you know, and I had an opportunity at one point to scout back in the early 2000s, and my kids were really young, and I kind of hemmed and hawed about it, and they were like, yeah, this isn't for you. It was with the Saints, actually. So, I knew that I wasn't going to be home a whole lot.
Would you have had to move to New Orleans? Or
no,
you
I don't
done
think
from,
so.
You could have done it from here.
Well, it was a West Coast scouting job at the time. So, you know, I don't know if that would have been good for me, but like, I feel like if I hung in there for that long, that you eventually kind of
work your way up.
And, this guy, DaCosta, who is with Baltimore, their GM. Mm-hmm. The new GM after Ozzie Newsome left, he was an intern in 1999. So, you know, 20 years later, he's the GM.
Went from intern to GM.
Yeah. So, well, and the same thing with like Trent Kirchner and John Schneider, really. I mean, same thing. Schneider wrote 50 letters to Ron Wolf and in Green Bay, and then finally called him back and got him in there, and it became the rest is history, I guess you'd say.
Hey, let's talk a little baseball for a moment. As we told you, the playoffs continue tonight, Yankees and Astros. You'll hear that game immediately following this show, but a team in this division made a move, and that would be the Angels have a new manager named Joe Maddon, and I like him a lot.
I do, too.
I like him a lot, and I like service. But I'd like Maddon, and I don't know if he fits with DePoto's philosophy or anything. I just think he's a guy who's gotten results. I love his demeanor. I love how he interacts with his players. I think that's a great hire for the Angels. And we got a cut from Buster Olney, cut number 10, talking about the addition to the team.
I thought he was a great hire. You know, the criticism of Joe from within the organization, the Cubs organization, was that the sense was that the clubhouse lost its sense of urgency after winning the 2016 World Series, and that for whatever reason, it just never really rekindled with Joe leading the team. I don't think that's going to be an issue with the Angels, because Mike Trout is the Angels' best player, and that guy plays hard every day. He sets the tone. It's kind of like when Jeter was with the Yankees. When your best player, and the best player on the planet, plays as hard as Trout does, I think it's easier, and there'll never be an issue with a sense of urgency, especially because that team hasn't, you know, it's been so many years since they accomplished anything.
And he went on to talk about, we don't have the cut, but they went on to talk about them being in the market for Strasburg and Gerrit Cole. Now, whether they get them or not, we'll see. But can you imagine
Strasburg,
one or either
too,
of those two guys? I mean, and Cole's already in your division, but he goes to the Angels. The Astros already seem stacked, and they seem like a team that's going to be there for the foreseeable future. And then if he happens to go to the Angels, and if they get Strasburg as well, or instead of, I mean, it looks like the mountain that you have to climb in this division becomes that much steeper. Or does it matter because you're in the rebuild, you're not really expecting to compete next year as much as Jerry said, yeah, that's kind of the year he targeted. I don't buy that, but
yeah, but
it feels like it digs the hole a little deeper.
Well, I just think Joe Maddon is a stronger skipper than most, right? And Jerry DePoto's doing what he does, and he seems to have sort of his own philosophies. I just don't see that ever would have worked.
Maddon yet.
Joe Maddon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I feel like, you know, Scott and Jerry work together. We talked about this yesterday. I mean, look, it's going to be 3 years that they have to make this thing work unless something goes terribly wrong or, you know, somebody doesn't develop the way that. But, I mean, this seems like a guy. I mean, he's almost too big of a personality, Joe Maddon, right? I mean, he's coming in. It's almost like he's one of those guys, like a player, where he the way, you know, his culture and the way the things that he believes in baseball wise kind of take over.
Yeah, I was just reading from Bill Plaschke's column in the LA Times. Madden embraces cutting edge analytics, preaches hardball philosophy, and pushes fun. And then talked about how he turns Wrigley Field, or he used to, into a pregame petting zoo, once even conducting a press conference accompanied by a flamingo named Warren. So I love all this. But, you know, Scott Service, you know, they got the pool table and they do the, I mean, Service does different things and Service likes to have fun too. I just, the only thing about Joe Madden, and you're right about, okay, one of the rivals in the division got a manager who's had success at Tampa mm-hmm. Bay, ended the Cubs' 108-year World Series drought or whatever it was in 2016. And I just thought back to...
And hearing they could be in the market for Cole and Strasburg, one or both.
Yeah, which you would think that it'd be more appealing for those guys to go to the Angels with a guy like Joe Madden there. And I was thinking about the Mariner. In the Mariners' history, the one time that they've ever made a huge splash, it was when they made a big hire of Lou Piniella. They got the mm-hmm. big-name manager, and Service clearly isn't that big-name guy. But it's a hard one because I love Scott Service. But there was part of me that was thinking when Madden was available, I thought, man, I wonder if the Mariners should look into at least interviewing Joe Madden, maybe on the sly or whatever.
You know, just don't
tell those guys do that.
Who was the GM when Lou Piniella came in?
Oh, man, who was it? Was it Armstrong? No, he wasn't the GM. He was the president. Was it Dick Balderson?
I can't remember. I don't remember. Somebody will text it in. I honestly can't remember who the GM was.
Yeah, I forget too.
Interview him on the sly. I like that.
Well, all those guys do that kind of stuff all the time.
Just don't tell Scott.
No, don't you? I mean, I think Scott Service is doing a good job. I know a lot of people complain about pitching moves and maybe how he hasn't handled. But you look at that team that they had this year, and he somehow kept them all together. And you know that the veterans had to be not really into what was going on, knowing that they were just here. Yeah, they were short-timers. I mean, guys like LeBlanc and Leak, do you think they really enjoyed their time here, knowing that they were going to be... And, you know, DePoto talked about it. Well, it's not their first rodeo. They know what's going on. But still, the human nature element of it, that couldn't have been a fun time for them.
Human nature, Dave.
Yeah.
Well, human nature.
Sometimes I'm with Jim on the human nature. Sometimes I'm not.
I got you. He was going big on human nature the other day when you were gone.
He was because he was talking about NFL players. Yeah. We just talked about it, and we heard from Ben Brookhaven that... There's no room for that.
Well, there is sometimes.
No, there's not. Yeah.
No, but we talked to Luke Wilson about it too. Remember that?
And
the letdown spot.
And
he said it was human nature to let down for
that
certain
games.
That
got categorized as things that just get said
by Luke Wilson, even.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know about Luke. Sometimes.
Well,
I do know that they're chanting his name, though.
They are.
We got to get him back in here.
Yeah, let's. I talked to him in the locker room after the game, their last home game. Yeah, and talked about coming on the show. And
what did he say?
He said, "Yeah, let's do it, man. Let's get a rivalry going with Danny's show." That's what we wanted to do.
Okay.
Yeah, and then when I talked about the whole stadium chanting after his 9-yard catch. Luke, I was like, that had to be pretty cool, right? And he goes, it was a 9-yard catch. Like, yeah, not a big deal, but yeah, it was cool. He was surprised he got that reception. But yeah, we do need to get him back. I think it's a great hire for the Angels, and it makes me nervous if they do come up with Gerrit Cole or Strasburg or both. I feel like, wow, that mountain that the Mariners have to climb just became that much steeper. I mean, you already have the Astros, and you put them in there, and the A's always seem to find a way, regardless of who's on the roster. If they're spending $100 on their roster, they seem to be in the thick of it. So, I know.
And you know, Madden will be thrilled to go home too. Plaschke's column says he still has a home in Long Beach, and he started out as a player in the Angels organization, so he's excited about the challenge.
All right, coming up, hopefully we've learned a few things today. We'll figure out exactly what those are. Coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It is time for What We Learned. It's brought to you by Carter VW. And before we get there, let me give you one more reminder that tonight you can join 710 ESPN Seattle at Snoqualmie Casino for a live broadcast from 7 to 9 p.m. It's Hawks Live Thursday nights during the NFL season, hosted by our very own Dave Wyman, along with Paul Moyer and Michael Bumpus. And tonight only, your chance to win two end zone tickets to the October 20th Seahawks game. The show up wearing your Seahawks gear is what you need to do.
October 20th. What would that game be?
That would be Sunday.
Right? Oh, it's this Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
Right around the corner.
Oh, man.
Well, you're a judge. What are you going to be looking for? What will appeal to you?
Yeah, wear your Seahawks colors
I'm
for a chance to win.
Any preconceived notions. I'm just going to go in and go by instinct, Jim.
Yeah, Dave is the only judge. He's the one you need to impress.
Are you like a Simon Cowell type judge?
Yeah, I'll be nasty about it.
Yeah.
This is atrocious.
What were you thinking when you left your house?
Right.
So, yeah, if you want to win end zone tickets to the game this weekend, show up in your Seahawks colors for a chance to win. And you can get more details at 710sports.com/events.
I've taken a few pictures with the super duper fans that were all dressed up, and I always, whenever I take a picture with them, I get a piece of paper and write, "Hi, Jim." Yeah. I've sent you two of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Do that tonight, would you?
Okay.
All right.
What did we learn, Maura?
Well, I think we've slowly been learning this lately, but Jim wants to make sure that we know for sure that he has a special affinity for kickers.
Well, his are just, plus. When you watch them, if you're really into kicking like I am, I mean, they're things of beauty. I mean, they're just so high and long, and it's almost like the goalposts, the uprights could be, you know, I don't know, 8 or 10 feet apart, and he could still split the middle of
them. If there's a post in the middle, he'd hit it.
He could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's you talking about the Ravens kicker, right?
Yeah. He's awfully good.
Justin Tucker.
Have you always had this fascination with kicking, or is it just recently?
I was going to call him Justin Thomas, but I was kind of distracted with the golf leaderboard on my screen.
Oh, yeah, as you
funny,
should
be. Because I was going to call him Jason Thomas.
Thank God Morris here.
Justin Tucker.
Oh, it's Tucker.
Yeah. By the way, we got a request earlier from one Danny O'Neill when you guys were talking about Justin Tucker being an opera singer for one of you two to sing a little opera.
Me or Jim?
Yeah.
I say Jim should do it. He's the big fan.
Jim was in swing choir.
Okay, I can give you a song that we used to sing back at Redmond High School real quick.
Opera voice?
Yeah, a little. Well, kind of.
Is this going to be loud?
Yeah, it'll be kind of loud.
Should we shut the door?
Yeah, shut the door.
Should we shut the door?
Wait, give the listeners a chance to change the channel before I get started. Ready?
He clasps the crag with hooked hands, close to the sun in lonely lands, ringed with the azure world he stands, ringed with the azure world he stands.
There you go, Jim. Nice job.
Oh, I got applause. Thank you.
That was a very earnest rendition. He put the computer down. He was getting the posture going.
The wrinkled sea.
Uh-oh, now he won't stop.
You know, he looked like he went into like a trance. Yeah. His eyes rolled up in his head.
I went back to Redmond High School.
He was like Will Ferrell in Old School during the debate.
1973. It was a good year.
What was that song from? What is that?
I forget. It's called the Eagle, I think, or something like that. Yeah.
Text it in to 710 if you know 710 if you know Jim's song.
Should I go on America's Got Talent?
Somebody said, okay, somebody put that cat out of his misery. From the 360.
I thought it was pretty well done.
Another one, make it stop, my ears bleed. Another one that said, not bad.
Mixed reviews.
All right, what else did we learn?
We learned quite a bit from Jessamyn McIntyre about players puking on the field.
We saw a lot of it. Willie Rogers was puking on the sideline. Marcus Strong was wrapping his head in cold towels. But I don't think that it only affected the Cougs.
Can I make my only contribution here just really quick? Speaking of puke, somewhere, I'll have to find it, there's a picture of me, like the play has started and I'm like scraping to the outside like an action shot and there is a wall of red puke coming out of my face mask.
Red?
It's a beautiful thing.
It was Gatorade.
That's just straight toughness. And I was honestly like really impressed by Eno, too.
Man, you know, who's the guy that was the phenom running back in those days, Jim? The kid from Tennessee that went to Oklahoma. Why can't I remember his name? Texted in 710-7.
From Tennessee to Oklahoma?
Yeah, like he's a high school.
Marcus Dupree?
Marcus Dupree, thank you.
Oh, yeah, they had a 30 for 30 on him.
Yeah, they did. And actually, there's a few shots of that game. They came out to Stanford. And, you know, just heard this legend that he was just phenomenal. He was like a Jim Brown type of player. And so, but it was a hot day and I was hydrating and I drank some, you know, some Gatorade, and I was calling the huddle and I started puking, and I got the call out. Then I got down in my stance, and as soon as the play started, scraping is like you have your shoulder square to the line, but you're like turned and running, and I'm running, and there's just this huge coming out of the front of my face mask. And somebody took a picture of it, and it's like frozen.
Ew.
Almost like, you know, when they take a picture of a wave with the guy surfing on it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It is awesome, Bob.
Were you a pre-game puker? Would you get nervous before games and go into a stall and do that before a game? Or
I used to, and then like after my first year in the league, I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
Is it a choice?
I just stopped.
Really...
It was for me. I just like, I can't do it anymore.
It was for me. I decide I don't want to puke anymore.
Yeah. Because my first start in the NFL was in 1988. We were in Denver, and the only thing I could eat, I was so nervous, was a bowl of Fruit Loops, and I threw those up in a garbage can on the way out to the field.
What made you choose Fruit Loops?
I don't know. It was the only thing I could get down.
It kind of seems like you like to throw up colorful things.
Yeah,
it does, huh? Maybe that's what my problem is. Don't eat colorful things.
Somebody get me a bag
artificial
of Cheetos.
No, yeah, we don't want to see that. Oh, but I just decided, okay, I have to stop.
I like that you made that decision. I will no longer puke.
You know what part of it was? I stopped wearing a mouthpiece.
Would it gag you or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, it would gag me. And also, I just needed to talk, you know, and, you know, make checks. So I just stopped wearing a mouthpiece.
That's weird to me that no cups in football and no mouthpieces.
Well, everybody wears a mouthpiece now in football. You see the quarterbacks.
DK Metcalf has a different mouthpiece every week, and the next time someone interviews him, I want them to ask him about it. He's making fashion statements with them.
All the quarterbacks wear them now. You see them take it out, make the calls, and then they put it back in and tuck it into their face mask up there.
That was one of Russell's more famous plays in the Minnesota game, where the ball snapped over his head, and he, as he's running back for it, puts his mouthpiece in, slides down, picks it up. I wrote in that book about that, how it's like a robotic, it was like a computer program, you know, first thing. Put mouthpiece in. Second thing, run like hell to the ball. Third, can I pick it up? Fourth, find open receiver, you know?
He's that good.
Oh, man.
Did we learn anything else?
Yes, one more thing. For some reason, Jim decided to put himself through Ben Burkhirvin and teaching us how to beat the Cougs.
If you went back and played Washington State, would they still have four plays offensively?
Yeah.
I didn't
need NFL experience to play them.
Oh, boy.
My college stuff's fine.
Super Coug here, so get ready.
He knows. That's why he's like, baiting him right now.
Show me as many times you want. 4-0.
Don't you ever have any regret at all that, you know, when you came out of, where was it, Menlo Park?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that the Cougs recruited you, didn't they?
I didn't talk to him at all.
You didn't talk to him at all?
Oh, man. We missed the best part of that.
Which part? That?
When Mara scolded Jim.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome. That was like the best thing I heard all day.
That wasn't very nice, I didn't think.
Was I being a bad teammate?
She basically...
Told you to stop.
Stop me asking questions.
No, you're being a good teammate. She was there for the listeners. The guy driving on 405.
I was like, enough!
It's Ben Burkhirvin. He's a Husky. We want to hear about his pro experience.
Yeah. I think she did the right thing, Jim.
I had it coming.
Yeah.
I did. I had it coming, and I took it.
I like that you were showing Ben your coat, your Cougar coat. He's like, show me it as much as you want. Still 4-0. But he won Jim over. Jim kept saying, man, what a nice guy.
He's playing along. Like, he knew this before, you know, when you brought up the Coug thing to him. He's playing along. It's not like he's a jerk or anything.
No, he was fun.
I don't like that I like him.
Yeah.
You feel conflicted.
Yeah.
All right. That's it? That's all the learning we did? All right.
That's it.
There it is. Our thanks to John Clayton, Ben Burkhirvin, and Jessamine McIntyre for joining us on the show. Again, if you missed any of that, just head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click that podcast button, and everything you missed each and every day is there for you waiting. We're going to be back with you tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.